for, a podcast about comedy and asking interesting people what they're nerdy for. I'm Amy Brown. I'm here with a special guest. My friend Jasmine Waters is here next to me. Jasmine is a writer, a producer, a stand-up comedian. She has two podcasts, Down and Nappy, which we had Carlette on the show and she told us all about it. And you also have While We Were Drinking, a podcast. And you and I got to do a show together in North Carolina. Nope. I was testing you. It was in Virginia. It was in Virginia Beach because you're from there. And it was so much fun. And I'm happy to have you on my podcast. Say hi.
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 What's up?
Yeah. So Jasmine, what are you nerdy for?
So I've been thinking about this like all day. Like I've been really stressed about it because I'm like, I'm nerdy for a lot of things and I can't decide which one is most appropriate for us to talk about. You know, I love YA novels. I'm a big YA novel person, despite the fact that I am a grown woman.
A grown-ass woman.
just so fucking grown.
Is it because they're easier to read? Maybe I should get into them because my reading comprehension is poor.
I think it's because I love rom-coms. You know, like I love like the romance and I like a nice YA, low stakes, but the stakes be high, but they're not that high.
How far do they take it? And this is young, YA is young adults,
it
right?
It is.
And then so it's all of the like almost hand-holding or do they go all the way?
No. So there's a wide range of YA. So YA goes from like middle school to like college, like in terms of who the people are.
Do the people like in the Twilight books, do they do it in the books?
Technically, once they get married, they do.
They do it?
That one's written by a Mormon. You gotta...
Is there special underwear involved like, in a weird sheet?
They might have done some jump humping prior, but I don't know the facts behind that. But yeah, so I really like the YA that's like high school to like college or like early 20s.
Do they do it in the, sorry, I'm just focused on this because you're bringing out the romance part of young adult novels. Did they do in the Twilight movies, did they, the characters?
Oh yes, now
they go
Twilight
behind a closed
movies,
door?
I am a like a professional on, like I know what happens in those. I actually host Saga Days where we watch all of the movies in one day. But yes, they do have sex in the last movie. No, the second to last movie.
Okay.
I mean, they do it again in the last movie, but like the first time they do it isn't the second last.
It's not one and done?
No. Once she becomes a vampire, they're really committed to the sexual endeavors of their lives.
Okay. That's pretty hot, actually.
I just wish she would have just committed to Jacob, but that's not the point. So, you know, I like YA, I like rom-coms, and then I also, because of my time when I was teaching at history museums and such, I love talking about enslavement and civil rights movement. So,
yes.
You know, I run the gamut of like really, really thoughtless things that I do and then
really
things
important.
That are just too thoughtful.
Well, you got to balance it out. I feel like reading about the civil rights movement and the still terribleness of America is a lot. And then you're like, and now let me go into a fantasy world.
Exactly.
Right?
Especially as a black woman, during 2020, everybody was like, well, did you see this? Did you read that? I'm like, bro, I don't need to watch 12 Years a Slave. I don't need to watch any. I want to watch Emily in Paris. You know, I want to see her traipse around Paris in all of these spaces that I know are not close together. I want to see her date the hottest men and I want her to see her ruin her life. That's what I'm there for.
Yeah, that character is very wild. But Emily, I was so it was feast for the eyes. All that fashion was so exciting. They were dressing her like a lunatic in that show.
No more crazy than like Carrie Bradshaw in Sex and the City.
Is it the same person doing
same writer.
It? I felt like it. Okay, that makes sense then because it's like, what's like the most fashion forward pushing thing we can put her in?
And Carrie looked crazy.
Yes.
I rewatched Sex and the City a lot and I'm on season 6 and she has like those two blonde stripes in front of her head, but the rest of it's brown and I don't know what's happening.
They're going for it. They're going big or going home. I feel like if you write civil rights versus a rom-com, there's like fighting for good and evil, like in both things.
Yeah.
Right. And it's sometimes more fun to have it be like, we can solve everything with love.
Yeah. Except, you know, not racism.
No, but it's not working.
It's because people don't have love. Love is, there's not that much. We write about it, but it doesn't exist.
Bless our hearts. I know. Golly. Okay, so this is cool. And then you worked at the History Museum.
Yeah, I used to work at the Atlanta History Center. I also used to work at the National Center for Civil and Human Rights.
Mm.
I did a lot of free. I still kind of do a lot of contract work around.
And you were on the television about it.
I was.
It was so cool. I was so excited. I paused it. I took a picture of you on the television and I sent it to you.
Yeah, years ago, I was the director of interpretation or director of, interpretation at the Atlanta History Center. So I was running all of the historical houses. So that included the Margaret Mitchell House that was in Midtown.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody in Atlanta or in Georgia, I'm not from Georgia originally, loves Margaret Mitchell. And I cannot stand Gone with the Wind. Mm-hmm. But I had to do a tour for 11 Alive or one of those. They came in and I had to do like a walkthrough tour and talk to them about the premiere in Atlanta. And I'm very good at when I'm talking about something and people are like gushing about a racist white woman who wrote a book that was, you know, just perpetuating heritage, not hate. When I have to talk about that, I also talk about the racism. So while they were filming me, I was like, yeah, no, totally. Martin Luther King Jr. was on the steps singing with his father's congregation for the premiere because they all dressed up as enslaved people and they were at the premiere.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, but you can see how problematic that was. And a lot of people in his congregation were actually really pissed to be a part of that. So
wait, this is just, you just blew my mind.
Uh-huh.
Was it a protest or
no,
did they volunteer to dress as slaves and sing in front of the premiere?
Yep.
I'm sweating through my hoodie.
Martin Luther King Sr., so MLK's dad, was the original pastor at Reverend Ebenezer Baptist Church.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the old Ebenezer Baptist Church. And pretty much what happens is the premiere comes to Atlanta. Fanfare, all that. Black people are not allowed in the theater because
it's
racism.
Fox Theater was still segregated then. Yes.
They're like, no, absolutely not. The Junior League had put on like the premiere parties and everything prior to, and MLK Sr. got his congregation to come out dressed as enslaved people, sit on the front steps and sing spirituals as part of the fanfare of it all, which a lot of his congregation were very uncomfortable with and did not enjoy it.
I bet.
And little MLK can be seen in the photograph on the stairs amongst them because that was his daddy.
I think I'm remembering, I think it didn't premiere at the Fox Theater. It was a different theater downtown because of which company made the movie and they couldn't,
I don't know, that is quite possible.
But I know the Fox Theater was segregated.
Yeah, that one was still segregated.
Like, and the way theater, longer than like thing, what, like if that history is not that long
and
ago.
And wherever they did show it, it was still segregated because Hattie McDaniels couldn't come. And initially Clark Gable and what is her name, Vivian Leigh, were going to protest and not come. But Hattie McDaniel was like, no, y'all need to go to Atlanta. Atlanta is a very affluently black city, and I need the money to go back to those communities. So go to Atlanta, raise the money, and it will go back to black people.
Wow.
So,
wow.
Hattie McDaniels is perfect.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that piece of history.
So much knowledge. But yeah, I just ruined that for them on the news. I did. They wanted me to be like, oh, Gone with the Wind, best book. And I was like, Hate it.
Yeah. Right. I don't know. Like, I read it one time when I was in Italy.
Okay.
And I was just, that was the only book I could find in English.
Yep. I've never read the book, but I have seen half of the movie.
Uh-huh.
And that was plenty. I was like, yeah.
And I'm good.
Don't need to commit to any more of this.
What's your favorite place to take people who are coming to Atlanta to visit? What's your favorite place to take them?
I love food and I like drinks. So a lot of my friends that come into town,
I thought you were going to say the Civil Rights Museum.
No, I can teach them about history without us going to those places. Usually it's Vortex because burgers and mystery shots are my vibe.
Mystery shots? Mm-hmm. You do like to live on the edge.
You know, until my body tells me that it's too much, which, you know, I'm in my 30s now. So
I was going to say, I don't even do mixers anymore. And you're doing mystery shots.
You know,
I need to know exactly what's going into my body because my body is protesting.
I just, you know, we smell, even on while we were drinking, we have like a mystery shot segment where we have like a grab bag that of Greeked shots and we don't know what we're about to take a shot of. And we try to guess. It's often a mistake.
What possibly could go wrong?
So many.
How many times have you thrown up?
Never.
Never.
We're
ever.
Professionals.
Yeah. Good for you. I got, after I had my second baby, I went out drinking with my lady friends, like, you know, finally, like, get to hit the town after not partying for 10 months.
Yeah, I was like, that's almost a year.
I came home and I threw up on my dishes. They were in the sink, like a lady. I got to the sink.
That's completely fine.
But it was like all of our dinner dishes were in there. I'm like, okay.
You know what?
I can't do that anymore.
At least it was the sink.
Right? Well, I mean, I am a lady.
Could have been anywhere else.
It could have been everywhere. It could have been in my hair.
Right. Ugh. And that's a nightmare.
That is a nightmare. Mystery drinks. That is throwing me even more than this singing on the steps.
I guess, though, if I was going to take people to a historical institution, it could be the National Center. It could also be the Atlanta History Center. I'm just not as wowed by them now that I've worked at them. You know, like when you work at a fast food restaurant for a really long time and you're like, okay, I've done it.
Yeah, I've had enough French fries.
That's how I feel about both of those spaces.
They built a new, for the circle thing, a new house for it. The Circle-rama.
Oh, Cyclorama,
Cyclorama. I was testing you. You did great. Cyclorama. I saw it in the original location.
At the zoo.
At the zoo, because my son had to do a paper on it for school.
Yeah.
And then they moved it, and I haven't seen it in the new auditorium. And that's just a weird story. The Cyclorama is crazy, because it was, like, painted by this guy who was running, like, for Senate from Ohio. Like, it's the Northerners winning the Battle of Atlanta.
Yeah, I think that's the coolest thing that happened while I was still at the Atlanta History Center. We acquired the Cyclorama while I was still there, and I was on a few of the committees talking about, like, reinterpreting it as it should be. Of course, a lot of... there was a lot of discussions because some people wanted to focus on the battles, you know, and just want to talk about, like, military history. But there was a good chunk of us that wanted to talk about the actual history and how it was used as propaganda.
It's an advertisement.
Yep. And how it, like, changed, like, mode of propaganda was, because that changes over time,
too. Let's do a quick description of it for people who, like, don't know what the Cyclorama is. It's tall, and it's huge.
So Cycloramas are, so there is more than one, but I think the one that the Atlanta History Center now has is, like, one of three that still exist in the United States. I could be making that up, because it's been a few years since I've had to say it. But it's this huge painting in a full circle.
20 feet tall.
Very tall.
And then you're in the center of it. It's like you're inside of a hat box.
Yeah, you're supposed to feel like a cityscape. Like, you can kind of turn around and see it all. So the way it was... when it was at the zoo, what they had to do in order for it to fit in that space was cut a couple of panels off of it.
Oh, wow.
So it wasn't the entirety of the actual painting.
Oh, wow.
And they also had people in seats spinning, when the original way in which it's supposed to be seen is you're supposed to be in the space and you're supposed to move.
And you're rotating.
Rather than this chair spinning and everything. So ours is the Battle of Atlanta. That's the one that's here. And you can kind of see Kennesaw Mountain off in the distance. You can see Stone Mountain off in the distance. You wonder if the distances are right, you know, all of those fun things.
It's an artistic interpretation, because it was just meant to get some guy elected seat, right? Am I wrong?
I think that there's multiple stories attached to it. Ooh. Because the history continues, like, accurate,
the provenance.
But there's so many things. So I think there was somebody who was getting elected. I think there was also, like, a salesman who had it at one point, because it moved a few times before it came to the Zoo Atlanta.
I heard it was in a circus.
Yep.
And the circus it went bankrupt in Atlanta, and that's why we have it.
Sounds accurate. I'm not going to lie to you. It sounds right. When the Atlanta History Center acquired it, I think a lot of Atlantans were a little pissed, because they wanted it to stay how it was at the zoo, because there were some people who really loved that attraction. And the Atlanta History Center was focused on restoring it to the way it naturally looked, which they did. And then the interpretation was focused around how it's propaganda and how it built mythology and, you know, and the people that were left out of the story. And so some people, when they came to see it, were really pissed. But there's this really, what I will say is, if you do go and you do see it, there's this really cool projection that I got to be a part of the process of it being created, that is now projected onto it, that talks about when it was created, why it was created, and, like, goes through in these, like, vignettes of, like, silhouettes of people, like looking at the cyclorama through time, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I will say, I think it's good, and it shows like how Confederate soldiers saw this the Civil War, and how there was so much intention in how we interpreted that way, and how who we left out, the stories of women, the stories of Black people, all of those things, and stories of Indigenous people.
Yeah.
So it touches on like all of those things, and I think that's pretty cool.
It's like if it's the 1700s and a guy wants to be the head of the clan or whatever of in like Scotland, like let's do like Jamie Fraser. Like if he had a poster painted of himself in a battle winning and like being muscular, right? It's kind of what that whole thing was. But
yeah, they even added the diorama pieces. The diorama pieces weren't with it originally. Then they
get
those pieces.
Clark Gable, right?
There's a Clark Gable.
There's a Clark Gable.
He's right
mannequin?
There, just dead.
It's a mannequin, right? Yeah, and he's dressed as a Union soldier.
He's dressed as a Union soldier, and he's dead.
That is a weird combo. Uh-huh. That is a weird ass combo to
because
have.
Because he asked after the premiere of Gone with the Wind, he was like, "I want to be in this. Make me one."
Did he?
And they made him one because the history's not real.
History's not real.
We do what
if
we
you
want.
Have good cheekbones, you get what you want.
If you're a white man, you get what you want.
That's probably that.
That's still today too. That's not even just back then.
Every day, man. Yeah. If I could wake up as a white man one morning, I'm gonna hit the streets.
I have not been to the cyclorama in its new place, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's fine.
You'll see it.
There are people who I remember the opening of it. We had established rules that people weren't allowed to dress in costumes.
Did they want to?
We had interpreters that dressed in costumes to do monologues and things like that. And we were like, hey, for the safety of our people, plenty of people used to come in there, Gone with the Wind finest. And so they were like, yeah, we got to stop doing that. And there was this man who came in a Confederate cappy, and he had his little Confederate flag tucked in his back pocket. And the second he was able to, he unfurled it and was very upset when he got kicked out, and then went to Facebook and complained about how the History Center was erasing history and, you know.
Erasing history?
White men history. It's, you know how they do. They're like, are you talking about my great-grandpappy?
Yeah, they're like, why can't I be racist? Yeah. That's my right.
It's my right.
You have to be tolerant of my hate.
History, not hate. Do you not like this Confederate flag? It's so pretty.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. White people are hard to work with. Y'all are wonderful.
Dude, I know, right? that's so crazy. So what's the, okay, this is sometimes when you go through the Atlanta History Center, you used to have a shotgun house in there, and I walked through it and I couldn't breathe. My friend walked through it. He came out the other side and he's like, I have pressure on my chest from walking through there. And we think there might be some energy in there. Did you ever feel that?
I wonder, I assume that y'all are talking about the enslaved cabin that was in the same space as the farmhouse, maybe?
Was inside the building.
Oh.
And it was two rooms.
I think I know which one you're talking about. That was in that one section.
No.
Okay. I didn't spend too much time in there.
Because I know there's some crazy artifacts that get sent to history museums. Oh, I don't know. Art made out of hair of your loved ones.
Yeah, people are gross.
Have you, like, what's the craziest? There's a whole, like, woven hair of loved ones into art. What's the craziest thing you've seen?
I will say, when I used to work, so the Swan House is on the same property. So that's part of the museum.
The Swan House was built in the 1910s.
Early 1900s, yeah.
Yeah, and it was a large, fancy house. And at the time it was built, it was away from the city, and it had a lot of land around it.
City didn't exist, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. No.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it existed, but like not in the way it exists now.
And then now it's just a Buckhead. Now it's all a community.
The Inmans were the family that lived there. Very rich folks. If you think about that section, that neighborhood in Buckhead, it is that. It's just that, but it's earlier. It's very rich, old white money. Very honestly, it's where they also filmed the Hunger Games.
Oh.
So the Hunger Games, President Snow's mansion and his office is
the Swan House.
Swan House. And so when I first started working at the Atlanta History Center, I took my tour of the Swan House, and on the top floor. And it's called the Swan House because of the bird motif that they have in the dining room. Mm-hmm. Because the Inmans is the name of the family, but Swan is kind of a coined thing based on design. So the servants' quarters would be on the top floor. I used to avoid that floor like the plague because, like, there's energy up there, in my opinion. Like, even standing outside looking at that window, I'd be like, nope.
This is the circle window?
Yep.
Yes, mm-hmm. I know exactly what
it would always feel
about.
Like somebody was watching me from up there. And honestly, if I worked for them, I would do the same thing. I would haunt the asses and the guests for the rest of their lives. But, man, it always made me feel so unsettled. Like, I knew I was safe, but I was also like, cool, I'm going to leave you alone. It feels like you're going through something up here, so I'm going to go downstairs. Because yeah. That's the original location of that one. Now, the farmhouse was relocated
from... The Smith Farmhouse.
Mm-hmm, and that one was built in the 1800s, so in 1860... Well, it was built in the 1840s, I believe. And that one was relocated from, like, the North Druid Hills area. So I feel like there was less energy. But when the lights went out, like, when we were done with programs and stuff, and we turned out the lights of the house... It is pitch black out there.
Yeah.
So I was never out there by myself after programs. We all had our flashlights. I got to light as soon as possible. I never looked back at the house. I was like, nope, this is not for me.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
My fears and my stresses were house related because I was like, there's people used to live in here. I know people died. I'm not gonna stress anyone out, especially in the enslaved cabin. I gave a lot of respect and honor to that space.
Me too. When I was
because there's enough people that come in there and really just don't care.
Really? Do you think they not know what it is?
Yeah, but then you have interpreters in there that are trying to explain it, and then you know, the thing about the Civil War or that time period is people are very defensive, especially here in the South, of what their families did and didn't do. So you get a lot of people who come in there and be like, well, my family didn't own slaves. And then I would kindly tell them, like, okay, cool. So you know how families don't own cars right now? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, but do you think they want a car? same. It's okay.
You're like, not to brag, but my family was too poor to have a slave.
I'm like, they were aspirational. It cost a lot of money to own human beings. So just because your family didn't own one doesn't mean they didn't want one.
And this is, I don't want to sound like I'm supporting anything at all, but this is one of the things people say is that Black people own slaves too. And I'm like, I know that's not the argument, though. That's not what we're talking
about. Definitely like, not. And like, man, again, I guess this is a nerdy podcast, so I'm allowed to nerd out. And a lot of that rhetoric comes from the continent of Africa. I say continent very intentionally because, you know, everybody always talks about Africa as one place. And we forget that there's countries inside of it. And inside those countries are states, and inside those states are cities. but a lot of that rhetoric comes from indentured servitude. It's not really indentured servitude, but like the same idea of indentured servitude in different countries in Africa. So they're like, oh, well, you know, Black people sold Black people. I'm like, that's not what people thought was happening. So the same way we have indentured servitude or people who had to pay off debts, like if they had to pay off their debts for their families and they were like, so-and-so is going to work this debt off for X amount of years.
And then
what happens is you come to the Americas, specifically what is now the United States of America, and we get chattel slavery, which is very different than what slavery had existed in different forms previously. Previously, enslavement was based around debts or things that you owed based on a service that you had received, and it's usually not... it doesn't usually pass down from generation to generation.
And be associated with the color of your skin.
Exactly. Yeah. So chattel slavery is specifically associated with the color of your skin and continues throughout generations.
Yeah.
Initially, it wasn't matrilineal. Originally, if your father was white, then you were free and you had rights. This woman named Lucy up in Jamestown, Virginia, in the 1700s, I believe it was, actually had that court case where she had sex with a white man. Let me not say whether or not it was consensual because I don't know. I wasn't there. But her son a mixed child. She went to court and said he is a freed man, because just because I'm enslaved doesn't mean he is. It's not matrilineal. And her son was declared free. Mm-hmm. However, right after that, we changed the laws so that enslavement was matrilineal. So whatever your mother is what you are, which is also what gets us to the space where owners of enslaved people, so enslavers, are taking advantage and raping a lot of their young women that they mm-hmm. have, that they own, and they are making more enslaved people that then continue to work on their property because those children are not free and the mm-hmm. illegitimacy is legalized. So, yeah. you know, we just created a monster because yeah. a lot of people are all like, another argument is like, oh, well, America didn't get that many enslaved people compared to like Brazil and other areas. But the thing is, we have more within years because of that process of breeding.
Right. How do you, I don't know if you know all the answers of slavery. You're doing a great job of explaining everything. I hadn't heard chattel slavery before. Mm-hmm. I think that's an appropriate word for it. I feel like slavery in the United States ended yesterday. Like, it seems so close in history when you think it's like three grandpas away. Mm-hmm. Were we like the last country to outlaw it?
Yes, we were awesome. Mad late. And then after enslavement was declared illegal, so of course Juneteenth is now seen as a national holiday, whoop whoop, but it wasn't, and people knew about it, and now Amazon has lost their damn minds. Every time Juneteenth comes around, I see decorations and I'm like, that's not what that is. So, you know, 1864, people are officially set free, quote unquote. But then as some forms of reparations are developed and put into place, so in formerly enslaved people are given access to Congress. There are actually more Black men in Congress at that time than in any time after, for a very short stint. Mm-hmm. Because then after time passes a little bit, and after the Union soldiers stop paying attention, and like they're like, okay, cool, we did it, we're gonna go back home, war is over, we're having a good time,
yeah,
we established Jim Crow laws, and that completely takes away anything that was given to people who were formerly enslaved. So in Charleston, there was this great plantation. I hate that sentence that I just said. It was a plantation, but it's now interpreted, and it's actually a plantation I didn't mind going to because they interpreted it very well. Mm-hmm. And they focus only on the Black people who lived there throughout mm-hmm. time. And it's called the McLeod Plantation. And one of the stories is one of the gentlemen who had been living there and working on the farm, who was enslaved on the farm or plantation. After the Civil War ends, he acquires a chunk of land on that plantation. He's given a chunk of land. The family, the white family, is gone. There's a lot of like affluency that is happening amongst the Black community there. And then the white family comes back and goes, nope, this is our land. And they get kicked off of the land that they had been cultivating.
Oh.
So there's a lot of that going around yeah. right after the Civil mm-hmm. War. And then we get into Jim Crow laws. And as we all know, those have never fully gone away. Even though they're gone now, they exist. I think all of the underlying foundations of enslavement and Jim Crow and how we've been like slow working out of it are direct correlations to the racial imbalances in our nation still, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Working on it, but we're not there yet.
I was somehow I got like the original charter language for Ansley Park mm. area. It is very racist, I think it's even to like the point of like Gentiles, like all of that kind of stuff.
Every
like,
time,
damn, they even wrote it down.
Oh yeah, no, people be meaning it. Like even like the segregation documents for the Civil War, people are like, no, it wasn't about slaves. It wasn't about enslaved people. That's crazy. But then you read like the Mississippi secession documents or the South Carolina secession documents, and they are very clear. Mississippi is like, hey, we're leaving because you're trying to take away our $1 million industry, mm-hmm. which is owning people. Yeah. And if you're going to take that away, we take ourselves away. And they, Mississippi is like, they mean it. They're, yeah, they're like, it is enslavement that we are fighting for. And then everybody after that is like, nah.
Yeah.
But we can, yeah, we can thank the Daughters of the Confederacy for that. They worked really hard to change textbooks. So, yay.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Oh. And that was like in the early 1900s. Mm-hmm. Those girls, those sisses, they're why we have monuments that have been taken down.
They, okay.
They're those, it was them.
The Daughters of the
Confederacy. Because women always get shit done. We
this
know
is
that.
True.
Yeah.
No, sometimes that shit's college. Real bad, though.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Sometimes yeah. We're like, man, put them back in the kitchen. Would that help?
Yeah. You're like, let's roll it back. Hold on. Right.
They have too much power. But
I have a joke about this. Bossy women got prohibition passed. I watched the yes. Ken Burns thing, and it was just all these pictures of like women just like breaking that's bottles.
Look,
and
I look at Swifties every day. And I am afraid of them in a lot of ways. Because there is nothing like a white woman on a mission. Last time I saw a white woman on a mission, Daughters of the Confederacy. Now Swifties. I'm scared of them.
Oh.
I mean, like, I'm not scared, but I'm scared enough to worry about what they're up to.
The potential. Yeah, like, the potential.
We got to keep an eye on them. What are they doing?
Taylor will harness their energy for good.
No, don't trust her either.
You gotta keep an eye on her.
But I won't say it too loud because the Swifties come for your podcast.
Is that why Kanye got up on stage? You knew, like, when she was trying to accept that award, but, and he's like, went all crazy.
He wasn't wrong.
Take her down. And
it was just not the diplomatic way to do it. And then Taylor Swift, look at her go. You know, I'm proud of her, but she could be president one day if she really tried.
Oh yeah, I'll take that.
The gals love her. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'll take her over.
Right, what are the choices others? Right now? At least she knows how to use a cell phone.
Yeah, we need to get old men out of politics.
Oh my gosh, these people are geriatric.
Yeah, they're waiting to die.
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Okay, this is like a little bit about your work in history stuff, because whenever I'm near the reenactor person, mm-hmm. my armpit starts sweating, and because they can only respond to you as that person from that time period. Mm-hmm. And so it's a little bit like talking to an autistic person. And you're like, this, what you just said doesn't make sense based on what I just said. And I feel like I don't know how to talk to them. And then I feel like they must feel uncomfortable having to pretend to be this person, and they're not on stage. Like, they're trying to do interaction. Did you ever have to do that?
Yeah, that was my first job, like my first job in Atlanta.
Is it okay? Am I overplaying
No.
it? Am I being worried about the person more than they're okay doing it?
Depends. It depends on the person. It depends on the thing. So for several years, I did first person interpretation as an enslaved woman.
Oh, wow.
I really appreciated
it. How did that make, can you just like tell me how that made you feel?
Oh, it was twofold. One side, I was very happy to give a voice to people who we had forgotten about their history for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, because I was delivering that information to humans, I hated it because people don't know how to act in those situations. I'd been called Mammy before. I'd been called Sealy from The Color Purple before. I've had white people tell me if I was in the kit or in the house sewing, they would come in and be like, "Oh, you're gonna make me one next." And so I spent a lot of my time making people as uncomfortable as they tried to make me.
You are the bravest person.
So
you're amazing.
When people would ask me, for example, like, "Oh, are you gonna?" If I was cooking open hearth, and they're like, "When's lunch ready?" And then I would be like, "Did my owner tell you that you were invited?" So lunch?
Is that
or like you? I'm sorry. Did you expect me to make you a shirt? That's crazy. You don't own me. Did you want to own me? Maybe you should talk to my owner about bartering to own my life, you know, as a human being. So I'd make people feel uncomfortable.
100-year-old shade. You're feeling.
Oh, yeah. Man, yeah. I was the shadiest little thing there. But because you kind of have to shake people up for them to really understand, like, okay, you're trying to make a joke about something that like is real serious. If you want to go be funny, you can go hang out with the white interpreters. They're chilling, you know, they're doing white people stuff. But if you want to talk to me, you got to come in a very serious manner. But I enjoyed telling the stories, but it was hard not to want to murder people sometimes.
People, yeah, I hear you.
Because people suck. But there were also fun moments where you realize that we're failing. I mean, we already knew the education system. It doesn't do right by all of our students. But there was a day we had a tour and I was cooking and, you know, we allowed students to ask questions. And one of the questions that the Wee Baby Angels had asked me were if I had met Martin Luther King Jr. yet. And so the way, like, all, me and my counterparts, we all had ways of, like, talking our way through questions that weren't in our time period.
Oh, yeah.
When we were in character.
That makes sense.
So I had said to them, I'm not sure who that is, but if I had to wager a guess, that's going to be a person who's born later than where we are now. And they were like, but has Martin Luther King? So Martin Luther King hasn't freed the slaves yet.
Oh.
And I was like, well, I don't know that that person is going to free the slaves. I'm pretty sure we're going to be freed before that. And then the teacher in the back, bless her, was like, yeah, Martin Luther King hasn't freed the slaves yet. Don't worry about it. I was like, girl, please. Please tell them. Please tell them that enslavement is over by the time
that Martin Luther King
born. Don't do this to the babies. So yeah, there's a big gap.
Yeah,
historically, and I'd be worried about kids because they say the darndest
things. We gotta make some TikToks explaining it real quick.
Yeah, I mean, you got 30 seconds, or they will tune out.
Oh golly. All right, good for you. You're so brave. Did you come from an improv background to be able to handle all that?
I did. So when I moved to Atlanta, I was like, I'm going to be an actress, you know. I was really in my acting bag. I just graduated from my program in theater education. I was substitute teaching, but I was also trying to act. I was working at a few local theaters, stage managing, and then one of the actresses on something that I was stage managing worked at the Atlanta History Center. She was like, we have an education department. You should come join it. You have a degree in this. And I was like, that would be magical. Can you give my resume to someone? And the education department at the time didn't have space, but the historic house, which was separate, did have space. And then I was hired. And I was the only black person interpreting enslavement at the time.
Wait.
The only black
I'm having
person.
A stroke.
So like the education.
In Atlanta.
The education department had black people, but they did all of our tours. So they did the tour on the farm, but they also did like civil rights. They did this other tour that was around the Civil War, but like in different areas. So in terms of like from 10 to 5 o'clock when we closed, people who were in character dressed up. I was of my colleagues there. I was the only black person. There were people who represented family members of the white people.
Right.
And I was the only person representing
now,
an enslaved
is that
person.
Because they couldn't find people who wanted to do it or they weren't looking to do that?
They had just started enslavement interpretation at the farm.
Oh, okay. So, and this was like, how old are you? That wasn't very long ago.
I was 23.
So when was like, what year was this? They started doing it?
20. So I started there 2014. So they had probably started interpretation with enslaved or talking about black people in like 2012, 2013. So they were still trying to figure out that interpretation by the time I got there.
Yeah.
And they definitely were trying to figure it out because like the education department had some based around their tour. But then I was really the person who helped figure out what that interpretation was for like the enslaved people in person or interpreting enslavement on the farm all day.
Yeah.
Because I was the only one.
Bringing it to life.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if it's a self-selecting group of people that would want to do that.
It's definitely.
You have to be so strong.
Yeah, it's a hard thing. I know when I first started, my family, my friends were like, you're doing what? but then as I got into it, I was like, nope, our stories are really important because even when you think about the house. So some of my coworkers, they were interpreting like Mr. Smith's children. But by the time we're interpreting, because we're interpreting around the Civil War, his kids would have had their own houses. They wouldn't be at their dad's house every day.
Yeah.
But so the number of enslaved people would have outnumbered the amount of white people on the farm at the time. So it was just it should have been more of us. By the time I was out of that position there. There was two of us who were there like all the time. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes people from the education department would come
and moonlight
and be with us as well.
Mark Kendall has a joke about doing this kind of work.
Yeah, the enslaved ghost tours.
The enslaved ghost. And he wasn't allowed to say slave or enslavement. He's like, I'm in an unpaid internship.
Yeah, no, we did not have those parameters. I was allowed to say slave. I was also allowed, and once I started doubling down on being an asshole when people were rude, I never got any pushback. It was never like, "Oh, Jasmine, you're making everybody uncomfortable." I'm like, I don't. It would be a weird thing to have to say, but yeah, it was definitely a weird job. And I think had I been a different age and like, you know, I was living in a new city, I was broke. Mm-hmm. This job was paying more and I was ready to do something closer to my field. So I kind of just jumped at it. But I was glad I was there because with me and some of my other Black colleagues, we were able to make that space better. Mm-hmm. We also
foundation for other people to step into. As you
And we stopped doing third person interpretation or first person interpretation. So,
what does that mean?
So instead of me dressing as a character and being like, hi, I'm this person, and this is my struggle. If there wasn't a written monologue for us to act out or a written scene for us to act out, we didn't do like the improv piece of it anymore.
Oh, okay.
Because improvising an enslaved person was very dangerous for the interpreter. So especially as I became like manager and then became director of the department, I like really doubled down on that. So if we weren't doing like a performance piece, people were just in our normal shirts and like
there to answer questions.
Talking about the history. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Rather than us doing kind of this dog and pony show of enslavement, because there are me and my colleague, our old coworkers, got together recently and went to Bomb Biscuits, which is a restaurant by Chef Erica Council. She came to the History Center a few times and cooked with us, and I had the pleasure of cooking with her, and she now has a restaurant in Old Fourth Ward, I think. Oh. And so we went over there and we all got together, drank, and we were talking, and it was like, okay, cool. What are your best memories and your worst memories from our time at this space? And the thing about it is you realize how dark the times were, but how proud of the work you were doing. You know, I was always proud to share the history, and I was always proud, especially to teach the young people who were malleable to it. But man, there were some dark days. There were dark days where they had us doing some real problematic stuff that I won't say just in case. I mean, I didn't sign any contracts, but just in case it's not appropriate. But man, some of them I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Looking back at it, I don't know that we should have been doing that one. That one seems questionable. It seems dicey. But all of my knowledge that I have now is based on the research that I got to do while I was there. So,
did you get like memoirs from people, like their diaries or things like that, and you're able to like in their own words?
So researching enslavement is really hard, actually, because it was illegal for enslaved people to know how to read or write. And so if they did know how to read or write, it was an anomaly. That was like the exception, not the rule. So you have some things, but you don't have a bunch. So a lot of the resources that you get are third party resources like the WPA slave narratives, which when you're even deciphering through those, you have to consider those were collected. A lot of those interviews are collected later after enslavement ends. And a lot of those people that are conducting the interviews are white people who are offering these formerly enslaved people things like groceries in order to give them like some knowledge about what was happening on the farm. So there's this pressure to not fully implicate the horrors or the hardships. So you have to kind of take it with a grain of salt. It's also where we get a lot of the way we think enslaved people talked. Like how we, you know, like when you, when
like
you're
cartoon
watching
character sound,
like that Jim Crow, Sambo character sounding, we get a lot of that from those because when they were taking down those interviews, they wrote a lot of what was said with an accent, despite the fact that enslaved people likely spoke with the same level of intelligence as their owners. So depending on who the enslaver was, they would speak normally, you know? So there's just a lot of information that you kind of have to sift through and figure out what's what's feasible and what's not. Similar with like enslaved records and like knowing who was on the farms or on the plantations when, because one person coming to do the census could be like, okay, there's this woman named Lucy and she looks about 17 and I'm going to describe her as brown. Yeah. But then the next person that comes the next year could be like, okay, there's Lucy. She looks like 19 because we don't know her birthday. Uh-huh. And I'm going to describe her as mulatto. Sorry to say that. I hate that word. But like, that's what a lot of the records say. And you have to figure out if these are the same people. Sometimes you don't even have names. Right. Sometimes it's just like young woman mm-hmm. in guest ages. So a lot of that research was really hard to do. But once you get into it, very interesting to sort through and to get a clear picture of a group of people who made their own community mm-hmm. out of nothing. You know, people, enslaved people came over here or were brought over here, and a lot of them spoke different languages because they came from different areas mm-hmm. in Africa, different countries in Africa. Mm-hmm. So you have all these people speaking different languages from different places thrown into the same place. Now they have to create a new language with each other. A lot of people brought over things like rice in their hair or seeds. That's how we get like watermelon over here.
Oh, wow.
Because they didn't know where they were going. So you bring something that you know. Yeah. And then like different cooking methods we get mm-hmm. from enslaved people, especially here in the South. So there's a lot of really cool culture that comes along with it. Mm-hmm. And you see the resiliency of people and how people survive through genocide, ultimately.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, there's not people dressing up at the concentration camps as in prison, I'm guessing.
No. And you know, I used to say similar things. I'm like, you know, we probably shouldn't be doing this. Cause when you think about spaces like concentration camps, we would never have someone pretend to be like, unless they had a monologue, if this was a play, you know, like you're not doing that, just like mm-hmm. letting people make up things on the fly. So we should have the same respect for the stories for enslaved people. So,
but it's good to have someone there is talking about
answer 100%.
Questions and make it come alive for this the young people,
Definitely once we were able to make those monologues and things and like have like the proper theater performances for these mm-hmm. pieces,
dude,
great time.
Okay, you're amazing. I have goose pimples all over my body. How cool you are. Have you like thought about taking what you've learned from that like and taking it to other cities that need education in this department?
Oh yeah, 100%. One of my
like
old
every city in the United States.
One of my old colleagues and mentors in a lot of ways. She started her own consulting company where she does education around Black history, and she also does workshops around dialogic interpretation and how we talk to each other, and how to like communicate and break things down, also cultural competencies. So her and I have been in touch, and I'm hoping to get some things, you know, do some traveling, do some workshops with kiddos, because there's a lot of workshops that I've created over the years that I'm like, oh yeah, even though I'm not in that field anymore, I would still love to teach it and double down, you know?
Yeah.
I'm definitely into it.
I didn't even know that's about. My husband
consistently wants me to open my own museums. He's like,
really?
He's like, oh, you should open a museum in Selma,
Alabama.
There's
a lot of money in museums.
more so because he knows that I will try to interpret things correctly.
Yeah, so you can get the word out.
Like we went to Galveston, Texas a couple years ago because my brother was living in Houston at the time, and Galveston is only like a 2-hour drive away. And so we were visiting my brother, and we drove down to Galveston for a couple of days. And that's where the origination of Juneteenth, that's where mm-hmm. The last enslaved people were told that they were freed, yada, yada. That's where we also get the Juneteenth Jubilee. That's where that first happens. And so they do a jubilee every year to celebrate Juneteenth. They were doing this before the federal holiday. And yet, if you go down to Galveston, Texas, which shouldn't have surprised me because Texas, there's like two memorials to Juneteenth or to enslaved people, and they are small. And their biggest museum on that island is the World War II Museum.
Wow.
Because we like to pretend like things don't exist. So I was like, man, I really want to open a museum here now talk about Juneteenth.
There's
so.
That one about lynching that opened up.
Yes, the Legacy. So
here's amazing.
Yeah, the Legacy Museum is beautiful. I had a really tough time in there. So when I went, it was when I was a director at the Atlanta History Center, and I took my team there. So I was a leader, so I had to kind of
I couldn't really focus. Real mom. Yeah. You had to not feel everything.
So, but it's so good. So the Legacy Museum takes us from like enslavement through like the prison pipeline and like incarceration and like unfairness in that. And then you have the Memorial for Peace and Justice, which is the lynching section. And that memorial, you go through it and they have these different monuments to people who were killed either in lynchings or in like massacres. So like the 1906 race massacre that happened here in Atlanta, you have like those people represented. And if we don't know their names, we, you know, put unknown and then the date to kind of give a memorial to those people. So very beautiful. If you're ever in Alabama.
Yeah, I hear it's amazing. Okay.
But you need like 2 days to recover. So know that.
You can go lay down afterwards. So, okay. We actually are, I got to start finding out what kind of a nerd you are.
Let's do it.
You've taught me a lot, and it's just interesting to hear all of it through your experience. And I'm so glad that you shared all that, but now we're going to be silly.
Let's be silly, because that's why I was like, YA, rom-coms, enslavement. Right. I was like, I don't know what I'm going to talk about with Amy.
I know, but that was such a, you have such a specific experience.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to hear it through your life experiences. All right. But now we're going to see if you are a big dork.
Probably not as much as you want. Yeah, let's do it.
You have a theater thing going.
I do.
So this, you could be a magnificent nerd. I'm excited. All right. Star Wars or Star Trek?
I have to pick one. Okay, cool.
Oh, okay. See? All right. You can say both.
No. I didn't want to say both. But if I had to pick one, I'm going to say Star Wars because it's the one I've seen the most of.
Mm. Okay.
But otherwise, it would be neither.
Are you watching like all of the spinoffs now on Disney Plus?
Nope.
At all? Oh, okay.
Seen like 2 Star Wars movies.
Oh, okay. You're not a real nerd for that. Okay.
Nope.
Have you ever LARPed or cosplayed? Not at work, I guess.
Cosplay in some ways, but not in a Dragon Con, not on a Dragon Con
level. Tell us your cosplay story.
It's mostly like Halloween. I know it's not really cosplay, but like I go up for Halloween and I go up for like dressing and costumes. So anything that somebody gives me a theme, mm-hmm. I'm down.
You're
for
down,
it.
Yeah.
I was just trying to figure out.
And done a great job.
I love getting dressed. I'm trying to figure out what we're going to be this Halloween, and I kind of want to be Corbin Dallas and my husband's white. I want to be Corbin Dallas and
Lelou.
No, I want to be Ruby Rod. So I want to
Oh my God, yes, Ruby Rod's my favorite from Fifth Element. That is.
So
I don't know what you guys are talking
it's
about.
Fifth Element. It's great.
Fifth Element's a really good sci-fi movie. And Ruby Rod. I should have known that I was bisexual, and I was like that.
Yeah.
What about when we were just there?
Is this our bisexual origin story?
Yeah,
because same.
Yeah. It was Fifth Element, and then The Mummy. Where it was like, Mom.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
There's a lot of good things happening here. I like this aesthetic.
It's all interesting.
Oh my God, I love it. This is great. Do I need to watch this to find out if I'm bisexual? I went to a women's college.
Fifth Element's that's a fun ass time. The director, I don't really think I ever got anywhere near close to that. It's such a weird tone.
Yeah, and the amount of people that don't really know about the movie, it's really strange.
Is that the one where the alien comes and she like watches all of the history of the world in 5 seconds and starts crying?
Yes.
She's like all in band.
She's a supreme being.
Also, you should totally do that because I just want to see that costume because it's so
done
good.
Done and done. I think I'm going to do him in the tight leopard print. Just in case you're wondering.
That's the best. The rose one's great too, but the tight leopard print,
everything.
I did see 2 leopard print Ruby Rods at Dragon Con this year. And I was just like, yes.
Yes, absolutely.
Super green.
Thank you so much. It's super green.
Have you been to Dragon Con?
I haven't, but I do like, so when I worked at the National Center, I loved going to... where the food hall-y situation is. What is that? Peachtree.
Mm-hmm.
And sitting and watching I love watching people's costumes.
Yeah. Like, it's so cool. It's so fun.
Everybody always looks so good.
Yeah. Okay. Have you ever like played like D&D, Settlers of Catan, Magic the Gathering?
I played Settlers of Catan because my best friend likes to play it. And when I play it, I like to guilt trip people when they take land from me because I tell them they're taking land from the ancestors.
You play that card, yeah. It was like the longest sitting you've done playing a video game or a board game.
Board games, so when it's not fantasy, Monopoly, I could play it for hours.
Okay.
video games. It was probably when the Shrek video game was out, or
I've never heard of it. That's okay.
Or there was this other game on Sega Dreamcast that I used to play a lot, that I always forget the name of. But I played that till the end. So for a few weeks.
Have you ever held a tropical bird?
No.
You ever had a card collection like Pokemon or baseball?
Pokemon.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have a cape?
I have a Hogwarts robe. Does that count?
That counts. Yes, you do. I do have a wand.
I do not have a wand because I want to get a proper wand from Universal.
This is
and
my
I
girl.
Can't afford it because it's expensive.
It's expensive. Yep. Okay, so you're a Harry Potter
but
fan.
But no bullshit wands. I don't believe
that. No, you got to get a good one. Do you like have a pair of fairy wings?
No.
Okay.
Which is a surprise.
That is a surprise. I bet you could get some if you needed them. This is okay. Do you have a perfect attendance award?
Oh God, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Did you get good grades?
When I wanted to.
When you wanted to.
In college, when I was paying for it, I was dean's list, and I graduated cum laude and then summa cum laude in my master's program.
Oh, but congratulations!
In high school, no, I didn't like doing homework.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so
well,
that
you
took
were
off
passionate
a lot of
about it,
right?
And so your degrees in education and theater, or
yeah,
theater
so,
education, like what?
So undergrad, it's a double major in theater and education.
Okay.
And then my master's is in creative and innovative education.
Well, that's what you're doing. You're the only person I know who majored in something that's that like esoteric and actually gets to use it.
Well, I was. Now I work for a production company, so.
All right.
You leave these things behind.
I got excited that someone majored in theater and history, well, education, and got to use theater to educate.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Dude.
10 out of 10.
And you got a paycheck. It wasn't just like a volunteer thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good for you. All right. Do you have a pilot's license? That's a weird question.
Nope. Hate heights.
Me too. Scuba diving, you ever done that?
Nope. Don't believe in the ocean.
It's not real. It's a big ocean trying
That's
to teach.
That's where people go to die.
Right. Yeah. Scuba diving? No.
Did you ever go to camp in the summer, like band camp, Bible camp?
I went to yearbook camp.
Yearbook camp?
Throughout
I have never heard of
throughout
this.
Throughout high school.
What is yearbook camp?
So when you're on the yearbook, every summer, a certain group of people, usually the leadership of the yearbook, get to go to camp where you start preparing what the yearbook's going to look like for the year. So you talk about your theme. You talk about whether it's not going to be in color or black and white. You talk about page layouts. You go to little workshops. It's very nerdy.
Listen,
actually, now that I say it out loud,
that's one of the nerdiest camps I've ever heard of.
I had a great time.
Oh my gosh.
My freshman year, I got to go because our yearbook advisor loved me, and me and him are actually still really cool. We're like very good friends.
Do you guys send each other pictures of awesome yearbooks?
I do have a yearbook collection at home now.
Is it a Pinterest or actual yearbooks?
So my yearbook collection is actual physical yearbooks throughout the years from the high school that I went to.
But are they your years or like other people's years?
Some of them are not my years.
This is new. This is a new kink I had not learned about before.
My siblings did go to that high school.
Yeah.
Well, two of my siblings went to that high school as well. So the years that I have, there are people I can look at in them.
Yeah.
So it's not so creepy.
Yeah.
It's not like from 1954.
No.
You're just going back to your high school every year. You're like, oh, go ahead, take one. They're like, we're going to cut you
off. They're like, you can have no more.
62, that was a great vintage for yearbooks.
Well,
like smelling
my
mold.
My high school wasn't made until the 90s, so it's fine.
It's fine. Do you have strong feelings about layouts?
I do. My senior year yearbook, because I was the managing editor-in-chief. God, it keeps getting worse every time I open my mouth about yearbooks. I was the managing editor-in-chief my senior year, and we were very serious about wanting an all-color yearbook. It was the first year that we were going to have a yearbook that was all in color.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. And it was called the gold standard, and our colors were blue, silver, white, and gold. So we did a lot of gold. We had these the motif of these lines running through this kind of track work. It was very beautiful. I think my yearbook is the best yearbook that was created.
Well, if you're going to camp about it every summer, I'm going to guess that it is, because I don't think anyone else is putting that much time and commitment to it.
Probably not. But, you know, we did fun things like lyric karaoke games where you had to guess the lyric. And
so you said you weren't that nerdy? And then all of these things are coming out of your mouth.
I also was a competition cheerleader, so you know, balance.
Yeah.
Yeah, Okay, so I feel like you do have a cool girl energy about you. Like, you have a very sexy voice. You know what to say. You know, like, when you're talking
to
people.
You could just sit at every table at lunch.
You're bisexual. You can't get any hotter than that. Dude.
Everything's bisexual about me. Right down to my yearbook versus cheerleading.
The tension. Do you have a tattoo? A
yearbook
tattoo?
Oh, no, I don't have a yearbook tattoo, but I have, like,
several. 15, I can see one right now.
Maybe.
You have 15 tattoos?
Maybe more now. I don't know. I stopped counting because it got crazy. But okay. Yeah, I have a lot of tattoos.
Are any of them nerdy? Or all of them nerdy?
My nerdiest tattoos might be the ones that are showing currently, which are my Latin phrases. Because
you have Latin tattooed on your body. Tattooed on my body. And my husband.
It's probably the nerdiest that I have.
Did you take Latin?
I did not, but I liked a lot of the phrases because there's as I dream, I write, and as I teach, I learn. Got to put that on my body. Memento mori, because we have to remember we all die. Probably the only other nerdy tattoo I have on my body is my Doodle Bob tattoo. So
what's
if anybody ever watched SpongeBob,
okay.
There's an episode where he makes a doodle and the doodle comes to life and he's a menace and he's very dangerous. And me and my best friend got matching tattoos of Doodle Bob. And the entire time we were getting tattooed, we made them hoi ni oi 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 noises.
Yes, SpongeBob is so good.
Doodle Bob,
that's such
okay.
Good, that's such good comedy.
You just told me you got a tattoo because of an esoteric character on an animated TV show. Mm-hmm. And you were making the sound of the character the whole time you were having the tattoos.
At
but
like
how
nine
old
at
were
night.
You? Were you 7 years old?
No, this happened when I was in my late 20s.
And that's when your front lobe is supposed to be all developed.
You know Mandel, right? I work with him a lot, but he's talked to me before. He was just like, there's never going to be anything funnier than SpongeBob to me. He was like, I'll be sitting there and I'll just start thinking of episodes and I'll be dying. And
especially the early episodes. And they were
like,
so good.
And he's like, and then I got to explain to someone, oh, I'm 30 and
I'm grown.
I'm just thinking about SpongeBob. No big deal.
And when people look at my tattoo and say, oh, you have a SpongeBob tattoo, I'm like, it's Doodlebob.
Get it right.
So, yeah.
Are you excited about the musical that's coming out? Or
didn't know that was happening.
Oh, yeah, there's a SpongeBob musical.
It depends. If it's giving early SpongeBob energy, then yes. If it's giving like the new SpongeBob energy, then no. Mm-hmm. I'm too old for the new
you
stuff.
You like the OG SpongeBob. Yes. Clearly, I have not really watched a lot of episodes, so I won't even know the difference. But that makes you very nerdy. I know that. Do you like Jeopardy?
Not as much as I could, but I do like trivia.
Do you like trivia? Okay. Mm-hmm. Have you ever said huzzah?
Yes.
You've been in the Ren Faire.
All the time.
All the time.
Oh, no, not the Ren Faire all the time. Huzzah all the time. Ren Faire once. I hated it because it's hot.
Fair enough. Did you ever dress in a costume like to go to school like more than one day in a row?
No.
Okay, I did. But have you ever been shoved in a locker?
No.
Okay. Have you ever written fan fiction?
Yes.
Ooh, what did you write fan fiction about?
I wrote a fanfic about Taylor Lautner. I had this dream once after I watched the first Twilight movie where Taylor Lautner, as an actor, was on this show about being on a reservation. And there was this other girl who was a black woman who was part of an indigenous tribe that was more, you know, melanated. And so she was also cast on the show, but she was like very, like, was her first acting gig. And her and Taylor Lautner had a hot night where she accidentally gets pregnant, which is ironic because her character on the show is like pregnant by his character. And then they're having to work through all of this and it's a lot.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
So, you know, Stephanie Meyer's not the only one who can have a dream and then write it down.
And then write it down. Yeah. Okay. I think I know what I need to know from my questions. I just want to see if they're okay. Legos, Death Star Lego.
No.
Do you play an instrument?
No.
Coin collection?
No.
Aquarium?
No.
Ham radio?
No.
God, that camp one still has got me swirling. You have some of the weirdest nerdy things to come across my desk, and I don't know what
Thank
episode
you.
We're on, but I've interviewed a lot of people.
thank you.
I feel like,
I mean, this is hot bisexual nerd energy.
I've had many friends
like this. From just like, yeah. Once again, you sat at every table. You're just going around, and you're friends
with everybody. I'm friends with the skaters. Yeah. I'm friends with the like people who are deemed nerdy. I'm friends with the football players and the basketball players.
Very it's chameleon cool. energy. Where it's like, I'll go to whatever party. I'll find someone there.
Yeah.
Be fine. And you'll get a tattoo about it, and then go to camp about the yearbook.
I also have an Encanto tattoo on my thigh, which is a Disney movie.
Mm-hmm. You have a Disney tattoo?
Yeah, I have a Disney tattoo on
my
thigh.
Get out of my house.
And I got that one like 2 years ago. Maybe a year ago. So.
You remember Jose, my bestie. Mm-hmm. He's got the Magic Kingdom on his calf.
Gotta do it. You got it. Sometimes you got to commit.
These people with their Disney tattoos. I've got bits about it. I won't do them. Oh, my love. All right. I didn't know, because usually, I knew you were, you know all the words to a musical, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's one of the
questions. It's multiple musicals.
Usually, cool energy people aren't nerds, but my friend. Yeah. You're grade A, sexy, bisexual, romance novel nerd lady. And I'm so lucky to have you in my life, bringing sparkle. Yeah. You're like a unicorn nerd.
Oh my God, thank you so much. I mean, I feel like you should have known I was a nerd when I came over to go into your pool and you showed me your costume closet. And then I was like, I need to wear this headdress for the rest of the day. Yeah. Normal people don't do that, I don't think.
It's great. Yeah. Well, everyone needs a little sparkle.
Yeah, you got to do it.
A little sparkle. Love a crown, fascinator. A little fascinator. Yeah. A feather boa. Let's go. All right, sweetheart. Thank you. Oh, tell everyone where they can find you.
Yes. Hi, I'm Jasmine Waters. You can find me on Instagram at Real Life by Jasmine. That's usually where I post if I'm going to have a show or anything important coming up. You can also find me on our podcast. So Down and Nappy, we are a rewatch Downton Abbey podcast. A lot of fun from the perspective of three black women.
It's wonderful.
It's insane. And we love it. You can find us on Instagram at down.in.nappy. And while we were drinking, you can find us also on Instagram at while we were drinking.
Wonderful. That sounds like fun. All right. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.